Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue the positional reviews for 2021. The Ravens season ending very abruptly with that six-game losing streak. The interior offensive line play, actually, I think probably one of the highlights of the Ravens season. And here to discuss it with me is Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, Ken. Thanks for having me as part of the series. Appreciate that.
No, it's great to talk football whenever we can, Jason. We do a lot of podcasts now per year together. I'm sure we'll do a number because you're a guy we depend on for a lot of draft material, and oftentimes on our live show we do for the draft, you'll use your big board as kind of an anchor to kind of talk about prospects. I think is fun. So we'll be looking forward to lots of content, lots of opportunities to talk this offseason.
Yeah, I can't wait, Ken. I can't wait for the draft.
Let's see. It's going to be a fun one for the Ravens. Lots of draft capital, much more than usual in terms of their position, has really increased a lot of the value of their picks round by round. So, they have a fair amount of additional JJ capital, and it's a nice flatter valuation draft from my perspective. I know you look at the draft, and I don't know how much you look in terms of the draftable players, but I would expect there are more this year, not yet having done my reviews and top tens by position and try to compare this year's top 10 to, say, the last couple of years' top tens. But I do expect a deeper class at some key positions, running back, defensive line, offensive line being among those because of the COVID impacts from 2021.
That's what I was going to say. It seemed like last year was so messed up, just a basic term, that we're getting rewarded this year with almost a double draft. Not quite that much. That's exaggeration. But, you know, I actually started with the running backs, and I'm looking, and I'm 12 deep, and I go to number 13. He was better than number 8. And
In previous years' drafts,
it's like if, for instance, we were to draft a running back this year, you're going to get a better prospect than your Justice Hills or Bernard Pierce. Other running backs we've taken in the fourth round. So I just can't wait to deep dive into all the positions. But I started with running back just to ease into it with a position of not necessarily need before I got down to the nitty gritty. But yeah, I know we're here to talk about the IOL, but yeah, the draft's going to be great. It's like Christmas. You get new presents, Ken.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels. A football new year at the draft. I love that night and those nights, and how well they do. And I'm glad to hear somebody corroborate at a position like running back, where the Ravens had so much difficulty finding any talent that was on the street in year one or a rookie player. Year one player, by the way, you have to explain. I know you understand this, is a guy who previously was on somebody's practice squad, but never has played a season yet in the NFL, and a rookie is a guy who just came out of college. If you, those two groups typically have all sorts of talent that's under rocks that haven't been turned up, except by teams like the Ravens, who do a very good deep job of scouting at small schools in particular, and they're able, they know who a lot of these guys are, and the Ravens have done a great job of picking up those guys. And that's what's driven a lot of what's made them a great UDFA team. But also in recent years, when they've needed extra bodies at running back, they had stylistic fits ready to go from that position group. And this year, there just wasn't anybody available. There's nobody on the street.
There really wasn't. I think, just one last note on that. I think the NFL as a whole is going to get younger and more talented this year. So that in itself is exciting. And then the other part of it is, when you get to a position like running back, and I'm looking, like I said, I looked at about 20 guys already. It's almost to the point where, do you want a great value in round four, or do you just say the heck with it? Whoever's not drafted is going to be almost as good as that guy.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be an interesting class. I cannot wait to do the draft with you. And I'm kind of holding back on a lot of my information because I really need to get my stuff straight this year. It's not as simple as last year.
It should be a lot of fun anyway. We've got a lot more to review than we did a year ago in terms of just available video and whatnot. So that'll be a lot of fun in of itself. Let's get back to the interior offensive line. It's always good organic conversation, though. The interior offensive line, another position where there were a lot of COVID sit-outs. So the draft will be impacted there. But let's just talk about the Ravens players for starters. I'm going to start with Bradley Bozeman, who certainly had a fourth year that made him a lot of money. He played well. I think an argument could be made that he was I think the second best, but not by too distant from Zeitler in terms of being the Ravens' best offensive lineman.
I agree. I think that Bozeman, you know, had his ups and downs, but it was mostly up. I mean, he was really steady player. Every player has their ups and downs, but Bozeman was really, really steady, made himself a lot of money. I'm looking at over the cap. The top eight centers all make between 10 and 13 and a half million. So it's not a position in which you're going to have your $18 million a year guys like your top guards. But they make good coin because, you know, your center is obviously, even though it's a supportive position, you're working together with your guards. You're not one-on-one as much as other positions, but it's still a leadership position and entails more than just what happens between the whistles.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and one of the things I think they really helped Bozeman with this year was taking some of that leadership away from him, giving it to Zeitler. You see Zeitler handling a lot of the line calls, getting the cadence set or getting it ready. Then you see the butt tap, and that leads you into Bozeman's responsibilities to snapping the ball. That played pretty well. Bozeman, not only did he improve year over year, but he also improved during the season in terms of how he was snapping the football. That, I think that was going to be critical to his value. Didn't have any really flagrant mistakes during the regular season. There was a dribbler. He hit his rear end in week 18. We saw that. That led to a big play. But generally speaking, I thought he did much better than he had in 2020. And okay, I have more to say on that, but I'll let you.
I was going to say the one thing I wanted to compliment Bradley on is just play style compared to some centers that we've seen. He's really strong, Ken. He's a strong player, a strong center. He's not as mobile as, say, your Matt Skura is as good as climbing to the second level. But, man, if he had just a little more help to his left, there were times where he was really able to provide a place to step up for our quarterbacks, which was really nice. And then, you know, I did his highlights a few days ago, and you could see him on help when he's helping somebody, knocking guys on their butt a handful of times in that video, looking for work and finishing that work. So stylistically, I liked having a big, strong center, I guess is what I'm saying. It was a nice refreshing because the Vince Wilforks and those kind of guys are still kind of there, even though their position is being faded out. You still need some beef up there at center, and it was nice to see some really more than functional strength from Bradley Bozeman at that position.
Yeah, he's one of the bigger centers in the league, and you know, there are some undersized guys, but there's a lot of guys in that 305 range at center, and Bradley Bozeman is more like 325 now. You really notice it when he walks next to players like Patrick Ricard, who is supposed to be, they still list him at like 311. He probably weighs 265 now, 270 in his fullback role. But they're completely different body types. They're basically the same height. Bozeman's actually an inch taller. But Bozeman is huge relative to Ricard. Yes. I mean, and you really notice that at camp. If you look back to week 7 of this year, he had a very fine game against Cincinnati in week 7 while the rest of the team obviously was not playing very well. He only had one game rated a C the rest of the year after that. He had a D, an F, and a D the 3 weeks prior to that. So that was his one, the weeks 4 to 6 were his dip in the entire season. But after that, his grades by game, A, B, B, C, B, A minus, A minus, sat out the Rams game, and then a B plus against Pittsburgh. That's a hell of a finish for a guy, and it will definitely make him some money. So he's in position, unfortunately, from the Ravens fans' perspective, to go out to the free agency market, do very well. If he's gonna be out there at free agency, and we know we're gonna lose him, we hope he does as well as possible, obviously, and maximizes the comp pick the Ravens get for him. I don't think there's a high likelihood that he comes back. I think there is a market out there for them. I think there's multiple teams who would be interested. What kind of percentage chance would you assign to him returning to the Ravens?
After I saw the press conference, it would have to be something really low that I don't even want to say, because his season-ending presser, you could tell he was a man that was reflecting on his time in Baltimore, and basically it seemed like a goodbye. I mean, you don't have to be an amateur psychologist or really, but you know, even into that kind of stuff. My wife walked by and I'm like, look at Bradley Bozeman. She's like, oh, he's he's gone, isn't he? I'm like, yeah, he's gone, man. Like he's really tearing up and upset, and he deserved it. I mean, he deserved his money. He deserves a place in this league. I think he's not going to be a top five type center. You know, people like rankings, but he's in that 10 range. I wouldn't hesitate to put him in a 5 to 10, 5 to 15, depending on what kind of system you're in. He made himself some money. Good player.
And that probably means he'll get between the second and fourth biggest contract in the entire league right now. So, I mean, it would not shock me if he gets the biggest contract ever given to a center this offseason. But I think probably between the second and fourth biggest contracts is probably where we're looking. I'll give him 20-25% chance to return to the Ravens. Notion that he would take less to be in Baltimore, I don't put a lot of credence to. But I think if he really felt like he wanted to play with Lamar Jackson or Zeitler and that they would improve his own play, there would be reasons to do it. But, you know, frankly, just in the purest business terms, this is Bradley Bozeman's one chance to cash in on his talent as a football player. And if he takes $10 million less over 5 years or over 4 years with the Ravens, I think he'd be a fool. So I don't expect that. I expect he will move on and make a lot of money somewhere else. And I think the Ravens honestly have indicated that that's the case by the contract they gave to Patrick McCary. I don't think you give him that kind of money as simply a sixth offensive lineman. I think their plan is for him to play center next year, and then also be available for the versatility that he brings. But I think they probably want him to be the starting center next year.
I think so too. And just to go back a minute, you know, you look at your top three centers: Frank Ragnow, 13.5 average per year; Corey Linsley, 12.5; Ryan Kelly of the Colts, 12.4. So yeah, and then it goes to a bunch of guys that make $10 million. So Bradley Bozeman at $12 million, I mean, that's going to be a good deal for the other team, for whoever signs him. Mm-hmm. But the reason I put it so low again is what I saw from him personally, and then also the McCary thing, like you just brought up. I think that it would be a good plan in place. I'm not sure if you have your grading from a couple of years ago when McCary is graded out at center, but to me, he looked pretty darn good in that role until all of a sudden in Buffalo, he couldn't snap the ball. So as far as like you know, when the Ravens go with that 80-20 type philosophy, hey, we can get 80% of what Bradley Bozeman. Heck, McCary might even be as good as Bradley Bozeman, but we have McCary on the roster now for $6 million a year. I would think that their plan of attack this year coming up, Ken, would be to draft a young guy, and you have McCary, you have Tristan Colon, and mm-hmm. you have the rookie all in there as options at center for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, and then you have a backup, even if you're forced into having McCary play tackle, which unfortunately seems awfully likely that it will happen at some point. One of the questions coming up for 2022, and this is, you bring it up now, let's talk about it while it's hot, is it a better move for the Ravens to have McCary be a pure sixth offensive lineman, where his only role initially, he'll play some backup center in the preseason, he'll be ready to play that position as needed, but he'll also be ready to step in at guard if that's needed, or a tackle if that's needed, particularly on the right side. Do you start him like that so that your change on the offensive line could be a one-for-one change, as opposed to having to swap two positions if McCary has to move to right tackle from center, and then you have to bring in a new center?
I really think that the plan for the Ravens is to start him out at center. Yeah, I would guess, if I had to guess, and I don't have any inside knowledge, but I bet you that they were negotiating a little bit with Bradley, negotiating a little bit with McCary, getting a feel for where each player was. McCary says, hey, I'll take this. I mean, it's a sweet deal for the Ravens. It's a $6 million, basically, McCary, 3 years, $15.4 million. So, you know, you get if a starting center at $5 million who's just as good or almost as good as Bradley Bozeman, I think that's the plan that they went for. And to answer your question on flexibility, I think that they can get that from other areas as far as, you know, we're going to need another guard in here one way or another. I don't think people, they just think we have to replace Bozeman, but it could be a guard tackle guy that gives you the flexibility. So where you can say, okay, well, we have another guy that can kick out like a Tyree Phillips type, and play tackle, play guard, we're not sure. But I would love, in an ideal world, I would love to have McCary as the sixth lineman. I think that would be the best ideal lineup for the 2022 Ravens.
Yeah, I tolerate one guy who's a guard tackle or IOL tackle on the roster. If you're depending on multiple guys for that, you got a real problem. I want to have three guys that only play tackle, and I want to have two guys who are really able to play left tackle. And that's where the Ravens are really going to have to address a lot of where they deal with the draft capital. Because right now, I think they have zero guys on the roster who they're sure of in terms of playing tackle. I don't think can't be sure about Ronnie Stanley. If you're thinking about Juwan James, I mean, that's the last refuge of a scoundrel. I've been saying is the biggest lottery ticket of all in terms of him coming back and playing at a high level and not getting hurt, because it's all of those things. That's what you need. You don't just need, oh, he came back and played a high level, but he got hurt. Well, you should have anticipated that. The guy hasn't played in 3 years, basically.
Exactly. And I think just maybe to clarify, because maybe I didn't explain that, we're going to have to bring in tackles. And chances are that if we have a, you know, say James comes back or Ronnie comes back healthy, we're not playing around with that position, Ken. We're bringing in tackles. And if we have three, one of them might be able to play guard. Or if we have four, rather, one of them might be able to be used at guard because you still have that depth. So I'm not talking about pure guards that can, your desperation throwing out a tackle. I'm kind of talking about the other way around, because we can't mess around with the tackle position.
I agree. And that's the way I would approach it, is exactly the way you're talking about it. Yet those guys you're talking about that are tackles that could play guard, mm-hmm. I mean, there are some of them, but they're tackles that could play guard and are thought of guards generally for physical limitation purposes. So like some of the draft picks from last year in particular, the tackles had a lot of real short armed tackles who weren't going to make it at tackle. Liam Eichenberg, you know, played a fair amount of tackle for Miami and sucked. Carmen, the guy with the Bengals, was a guy who everybody knew really had to be moved inside right away. Yep. You and I, in comparing draft lists last year, I remember there being a lot of guys at tackle who just, you know, you project them to the NFL, they're a guard. It was the guy, this Christensen, right, the center?
Guy from BYU, yes.
Yeah, who had played tackle there. But it's just generally true that there are a lot of guys who play tackle in college and they can't cut it in the NFL at the position because the physical, you know, minimums are at a higher level.
Just wanted to add, Ken, this whole situation out of all of it stresses me out the most.
Yeah.
It's what I don't want to think about is how they're going to attack the line, because who knows what's going on with Stanley? I'm kind of with you. You can't. Juwan James would be just a great surprise, and if he comes up and rises up to be your best right tackle, that's mm-hmm. a bonus you got to look at. So there's a lot of ways we can slice this, and it's going to be. I'm going to just try to exercise patience.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Ronnie Stanley, I'm afraid to think this is the case, but my fear would be if he's not ready to play in 2022. That we really might not see him again. Yeah. And it doesn't mean he won't be a Raven, because they can't cut him next year. So no. He'll be a Raven for all of 22. In 23, they can do it. It's not really a big savings, but they could figure out when is the appropriate time to get the contract off the books. But if the injury is such that he can't play again, I mean, obviously that's a very severe hit for the Ravens, in terms of the total guaranteed value of that contract plus, you know, because they'll play out some non-guaranteed dollars too. Frankly, not producing any value. And the situation is awful for Ronnie. Don't get me wrong. I wish the best for him personally. And it's the first consideration, or it should be the first consideration for all of us, is that he has a normal life with that ankle. But, it may be that his days of playing football are over. And I certainly hope I am being overly pessimistic with that viewpoint, but we went through the Dennis Pitta era here in Baltimore, and honestly, that's exactly what we went through.
Yeah, so those kind of injuries, double surgeries. I mean, it's a really tough situation for Ronnie. And again, we're not talking about a quarterback, or this is you need eight good linemen, Ken, really. If you want to go into a season confident, you better have eight guys that you can say, hey, we can use that guy. He'll be more than fine. He'll be good. And, when you have such a talent like Ronnie at such an important position, making that kind of money and his status is up in the air, I mean, that's a superstar right there.
Kind of incredible that the Ravens really had a surplus of players, both on the offensive line and at cornerback from that position. Two positions where that depth eroded within the season on them, like in a snap. I mean, the cornerback took the entire year as a long ski slope down to the street level players on the team, with Seymour and Jackson and Worley all playing on the field at the same time in one nightmare scenario. But the tackle position went downhill very quickly, obviously, and they were able to trade Ben Bredesen during the preseason, get a decent return on him, just because it's very hard for NFL teams to find eight guys that they can really trust and to maintain their depth. And the Ravens had started right away. They lost Phillips in game one. They lost Stanley after game one. It went downhill very quickly for the Baltimore Ravens, unfortunately.
So we talked about Bozeman and we talked about McCary. Another guy that I wanted to talk about is Ben Powers.
Sure.
He played 13 games, first 13 games, I believe, before he got hurt. And, he graded in the C's for you. But this is a guy mm-hmm. that traditionally we kind of split on with our overall assessment mm-hmm. into where I kind of think he's topped out. I don't think he gives you as many splash plays. I think he technically makes the blocks, but they're not giving you space. I've been a little lower on Powers than you have. But I want to see a situation, Ken, where a guy like Ben Powers, who's entering the final year of his contract, where he has really we cultivate this inside this interior so well that he's on the outside looking in when training camp starts, and he's really got to earn his spot, that we're not just giving a spot Ben Powers, where we're aggressively addressing this situation where a guy like Powers has to progress, keep getting better, or he might be on the outside looking in. Trade him in for a younger player.
I mean, his status is particularly complicated for a couple of reasons. First of all, he earned an escalator bonus, so he's now going to make, and you can look it up on OTC if you would, but mm-hmm. something like $2.5 million this year, which is, twice what the Ravens would probably like to, they'd like to pay him something over a vet minimum, but I think they'd be happier paying him 1.5 or 1.7 million, something that's just a little bit of a premium to the vet min. And having him play for that. But honestly, at that level, he's on the bubble starting camp, because the Ravens are tight on cap, and they're going to look at that as a million and a half of harvestable cap if they bring in a veteran to do it. Do you have the actual number there on OTC?
Yeah, so it's looking at unearned, partially earned money. He went up from, it looks like he made himself a good.
So what's his base salary for 22? Do you have that in front of you?
So for 22, his base salary is 2.54.
Okay, so that was what I recall too. So, if you compare that to what the vet minimum is, which is $937,000, I think when you factor in the discount, there's lots of reasons why the Ravens would just say, "I'm sorry, we can't play it. Ben Cleveland's going to be our starter, our presumptive starter," and I think that's going to be the case. And we can talk about that next. But then in the case of Powers, they really have to say, yeah, you got to earn this spot, and we need to consider all the factors. We're willing to keep you around, but there's a number, and it's lower than that. And the Ravens will very rationally look at this and say, he might be a guy who could play well. And frankly, if he played as well as he did the whole season, there would be suitors for Ben Powers in 2023. So if he played 13 games again, as well as he did this year, I mean, PFF has him, pretty high in their total rankings of guard. I have him as a solid C player for the entire year. There's enough there that somebody's going to say, we'll give that guy 3 years and $12 million or something. It won't be a backbreaker of a contract, but it'd be enough to earn the Ravens a comp pick, which is why they'll look at, hey, is it worth paying an extra $600,000 or $700,000 for Ben Powers to stay in Baltimore this year?
I mean, and just to back up your point, different contract situation, but we were just talking about Ben Bredesen netting a fourth round pick, which tells you there's a value. I mean, Powers has played much more football than Bredesen has, and better. So, there'll be a market, but it's what we save $2.5 million before having to replace them. So, you're looking at $1 million plus. One and a half, where every penny counts. And like I said, just to get younger in that room, to get somebody maybe with more upside, to get a better player. We mentioned how deep this draft is. I haven't dug into the guards, but you may be able to get a Ben Powers like player maybe as ready or as good as him, fourth, fifth round, same spot where you picked him. So
yeah, it's another thing where Powers was a four, right, when they drafted him,
fourth round. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so it's one of these cases where you have a declining option value, a declining value of the original option, and unfortunately, two things have occurred. The value of Bozeman's future, Powers' future to the Ravens has declined. But in addition, his cost has increased, yes, relative to the declining value of that option. So, you know, the Ravens are really not having to make this consideration on the margin. And they've had this situation come up with fourth year players before with RFA tenders. They had to come up with Chris Board last year where he agreed to sign for less, agreed to have his salary reduced before the season. They've had to come up before with two players, Hurst and Jensen, I believe, were in their fourth year at the same point. I may have that wrong. It's Jensen and one other player were in their fourth year at the same point, and they had to take less money rather than take the full RFA tender. So it's often done, and it's not something either the team or the player really wants to make public. But it is often done that the teams really have the upper hand in asking the player to take a lower salary, and you know, otherwise the money's not guaranteed, and an RFA tender included, and they can cut that player if he's not injured at the end of camp, and just not pay him.
Yeah. So in short, I don't see Ben Powers on the roster next year when it's all said and done. If I had to guess, I would say 60-70% chance that he's not here, that the Ravens aggressively attack the offensive line, replace him, you know, to, you said the declining value, all that is true. So yes, I think when you're looking at the 2022 Ravens, Ben Powers will be probably on the outside looking in, maybe a trade. Maybe we can trade him to a team that needs some help in there.
Yeah, trade is possible, and don't expect a big return in value. It'll probably be a sixth round pick if they trade Ben Powers, maybe a five at the top end. The Ravens probably they might be able to get a five from a team that's looking to possibly pick up a comp pick for Powers a couple of years hence.
Right.
You know, that they may feel like they can get a little more value that way, and they have a need at guard right now. So maybe there's a five out there for Ben Powers, but it won't be exciting value, guys. They're not going to get back the same round of selection they expended here on a player like Ben. I think there's probably about a 60-65% chance he ends up with the Ravens, but it'll be a lower salary than 2.54 million.
Okay, I gotcha. So right, so just work with them, keep them here for cheaper. I see.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that fits the Ravens' MO of wanting to keep a player happy. But they'll look at trade avenues. They'll see if that works. If they do cut him, there are other teams who want Powers. If they cut him, someone will pick him up on a waiver claim. Probably. Oh, no. Probably not. It'd be close. If somebody pick him up on a waiver claim, then somebody probably trade for him. So I'm not sure how that would work out. It'd be interesting to see how that would work out.
Yeah, because it's not a ton of money, you know, if you claim them. Taking on a $10 million a year contract. So, yeah, it's a question up in the air. But, you know, in all, that's a spot I would like to get younger and try to improve. So, you know, that would be my thing on that. Kevin Zeitler, though, Ken.
Yep.
That's a guy who played really, really well. Probably, if I had to rank, if it's him and Bozeman, played the best. We signed him for 3 years, $22 million. I read you off the salaries for centers. Guards make a little bit more. So getting a player like Zeitler at a $7 million about annual value was a really good move. Now, we can't cut him really this year. He's, you know, it's a negative cap hit. Not that we would anyway, but, you know, starting in 2023, that's when his last year of the deal, when he would be cuttable. But Kevin Zeitler will be the right guard for this team coming up in 2022. And I got to tell you, man, I had a good time putting together his highlights, Ken.
Yeah, fun player. He glued that whole line together. Even Bozeman played well. I think Zeitler was more important in terms of taking responsibilities off Bozeman's plate and making sure that the cadence was started properly and whatnot. So I like what he did in terms of how he scored the whole year. You mentioned this, and this bears repetition, is that there's a lot of game-to-game variation, even for offensive linemen. And, you know, we understand that that can happen for receivers. A receiver gets shut down by a good cornerback, and then he has another big week against a guy who's not so great. You know, there's a lot of variation in terms of how that happens. The same is true for offensive linemen, and it can be true based on opponent. It can also be true just on when they have a bad game, pick up some penalties, the other guy gets in their head, whatever it might be. And Zeitler had a terrible game in week three against Detroit, fell off the table, had me really worried about his season. But then he came back from that. And after that, he had a remarkably fine season, one C minus and one D after week three, but otherwise A, B, B, B plus, A minus, A, B, A, C minus, A, C, D, B plus, and A minus. So a very fine, consistent season from Zeitler down the stretch in particular. And he was the glue that held it together. A little bit too much in the way of penalty yards, 55 this year more than I would like. But he was good in terms of quarterback hits and sacks and did not have a lot allowed. I think that if you look at some services, they'll tell you he had one or zero sacks allowed. He allowed 2.5 sacks, as I count them, in terms of the partials involved. Only 2/3 of a quarterback hit the entire year, which is remarkable. And then about a little over 21 pressures.
And then, Ken, something that I don't track numbers-wise, but I might start doing this next year, is that it seemed like Zeitler was singled up more than whoever we had at left guard or center. So, you know, the Chicago Bears game comes to mind where they just basically said, okay, Zeitler, you're blocking number 90. I think that's Angelo Blackson. And he had no chance against Zeitler. They singled Zeitler up on him all game, took care of him. It was a lockdown performance. Just a nice to have a guy that can handle one-on-ones.
Defensive teams that play a four-man front on most pass situations, which is a lot of what the Ravens face in a typical season, because Cleveland and Pittsburgh in the division are both using a lot of four-man rush. So is Cincinnati for that point. All three of the divisional teams do. Teams that use that, and the Ravens tight end in line is on the right side, creates a situation where you've got your three tech, and it's usually, you know, the one of the dominating players for the opponent is matched up against Zeitler one-on-one. And yeah, he did do a good job on those. And it's a good point. When I look at when the Ravens facing a four-man front, I always do give the center his scoring or his how I adjust the scoring slightly in terms of that with a jaundiced eye, because I think that, you know, it's easiest for a center to face a four-man pass rush because he's helping one way or the other. You kind of mentioned it earlier.
Hey, with Bozeman, right.
Yeah, with that one tech, usually he's helping, and that's usually a guy, first of all, who's not that great a pass rusher. He's probably the least of the four pass rush concerns you have. And then it's also a double team, so it's a good situation both ways. But what Zeitler did, and I think you mentioned it well, is that's the matchup that a lot of teams really want to force on you, is that three tech on the outside shoulder of your guard and what he can do. And Zeitler did a great job shutting that down this year.
He did a great job. And something else I noticed is when Zeitler – excuse me, Ken.
Yep, still here. You doing okay?
Yeah, sorry about that. When Zeitler was beat off the snap, he does a really good job of just riding that guy away from the pocket, the outside the pocket, almost like you see with the tackle, riding him away for the quarterback. Very rarely, I can't really even think of one time where Zeitler was beat in that A gap between him and Bozeman. He protects that. He's got his technique is just so steady. He looks the same all the time. And like I said, if somebody does get a little bit of edge to his outside right shoulder, he just kind of pushes that guy past the pocket and got a couple of pancakes out of that, which I didn't necessarily mark as a positive play because he got beat off the snap and kind of, you know, it wasn't great to have somebody in the backfield that quickly, but wasn't a threat. It was just another obstacle to go around. So really pleased with Kevin Zeitler. I did, in your grades, there was a couple of games towards the end where he didn't have his best games. Kind of seemed like he wore down a little bit towards the end. But, you know, he's a veteran, steady guy. Glad he's on the team this year and coming up this year.
Yeah, one of the games where he didn't play maybe up to his level. The Rams, he got a B-plus for overall, but he had a half a sack allowed in that game that was a very dangerous play. And you mentioned riding guys past the pocket. This one, riding them right is usually better. Riding him left across three linemen's legs, potentially very, very dangerous. And he did that on one play. And in fact, he ran into the back of Cleveland on that play. And that was, I was immediately afraid of an injury happening. You know, it's the kind of thing I'm watching it you know, for the first time where I'm really studying the offensive line, well, after the game, I allow myself to suspend my disbelief during the football game, attending it, you know, obviously.
That's the way to do it. Yes, sir. Enjoy it.
And then you come back and you start to watch the film on Monday night in particular. And you notice that, this is happening. And you see, boy, that's a big injury risk when he's, you know, getting essentially beat off his left shoulder to the inside through that A gap and having to push a guy. It's still, I think he's a good inside out player, meaning he's more concerned about keeping that A gap straight.
That's right.
And I think that's a positive thing. It's just, I don't like how he does it sometimes, but Aaron Donald is a slippery and very fast cat. And it can go wrong in a hurry with him.
Watching Aaron Donald kind of took me away there, because I don't get to study him. And he gave us he's the real deal, man. There's a reason that guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. So, yeah, but Zeitler, great player, good player, just a great signing. I feel really good about our right guard situation.
Yeah. It's a great contract. It really was. And the Ravens, I believe he'll play all 3 years as a Raven. It may be the kind of thing where he decides, he starts to talk about retirement and not wanting to be playing without a deal for next year.
Right.
Coming in. I think it's more likely that'll be the direction of it than the Ravens saying, now we want to save whatever it is, $4 or $5 million from your final year, your deal.
So I'm really excited here, Ken, because I want to hear your Ben Cleveland. I haven't really talked to you about Ben Cleveland. I'd like you to take it away, sir, and give me what you think of him.
All right. Well, sure. I'll start off. Ben Cleveland, obviously an up and down year. And it's interesting because the last two games of the year represented both the worst we saw out of Ben Cleveland and the best. So early on, he split time a little bit. They had him on a rotational basis with Powers, which I thought was a really good way of doing it, in weeks 2, 3, and 4. And he got 28, 25, and 33 snaps. That's the penalties excluded. So it'll differ a little bit from other sources. Played reasonably well, a B, and a D plus in those three games. Not a great showing against Denver, obviously, but there was enough there for me to think that some of the things I'd seen in camp and combined with the physical tools that he'd be good. Unfortunately, 4 snaps into the Indianapolis game, he got hurt, and then he missed a long stretch and came back against Green Bay, played well. The next week played okay against Cincinnati, I thought. The Rams, he had his worst game of the year. Rams inside guys, number 94, and I've forgotten his name now. I'll come to me.
Great Gaines is the...
No, Gaines is good, but
Gaines is 90, right? Yeah.
It's number 94. He's a large guy. Got a sack early on, and he's one of these guys that you wouldn't figure to overpower Ben Cleveland, but a very good leverage guy and certainly describes Gaines as well, but it's number 94 anyway.
Okay.
94 and 99 gave the Ravens all kinds of trouble. We all know who number 99 is.
99 versus Cleveland. That had to be an eye-opening experience for Ben Cleveland, because, yes, he wasn't great. His grades were up and down, but versus Aaron Donald was the first time I saw Ben Cleveland in oh shit mode, I guess it's fair safe to say on the pod.
Yeah.
Like, he just beat him so bad over and over again that Ben Cleveland was out of his sorts, out of his routine. You could tell everything was just a little bit off. And he came back in that Pittsburgh game, I think is what you're referring to. And I saw a little bit of nastiness in him in that game, a little bit of aggressiveness. So not only did he play a lot better in that game, but I saw a different kind of attitude from Ben Cleveland in that finale, which made me really happy to see, because a lot of the year it looked like he was just feeling his way, getting comfortable to the NFL. And that last game against Pittsburgh, it looked like he let loose.
Yeah, it's an outstanding game. He was in there for 70 snaps. He had 6 highlight blocks in that game. So I count up highlight blocks, and they go into the score adjustment for a player for any given game. It's rare that I give an internal player anything higher than about 0.02 or 0.03. But in this game, playing against Cam Hayward with 6 highlight blocks, I gave him 0.08, which took him from, it would have been an A anyway, but into a pretty medium high A. Land. He's made all 6 of his pulls. So that's, you know, something we've had concerns about before, that he had been a little bit tentative on pulls, but he was getting to them. He was hitting people play after play. I thought that was positive. One thing that I really love to see is offensive linemen having fun winning the line of scrimmage on a consistent basis. And to do it against the Pittsburgh Steelers and against Cam Hayward, you know, play after play, is really something. And one thing that you can see, if you look back on your video, do you still have the DVR version of the game?
Sure, okay. Yes, sir.
Go back to that, and it's after the two consecutive long runs, the 22 and the 27 by Latavius Murray, and the drive ended with the interception. But there's a 22 and a 27 by Latavius Murray on the diver. After the 27, then there's the camera catches the offensive line kind of going back to the huddle, and you kind of see Ben Cleveland's face turning as he's going into the huddle. The guy is obviously having a lot of fun. Okay. And the offensive line is winning the line of scrimmage play after play. And it's just it's a party going back to the huddle every play when you're having a game like that. Unfortunately, the Ravens didn't put it away. But, you know, they rushed for almost 250 yards against the Steelers, and they did it with Latavius Murray at running back, which means they were creating some significant holes in a level two.
No, it makes me happy that you noticed that, too, because I was watching, you know, I watched the game live and didn't notice that. But then, you know, I'm looking at the all 22 and you don't get all of that. You know what I mean? But it just looked like a different player as far as Ben Cleveland just decided to let loose. Not decided. Maybe he was angry about the Aaron Donald thing. Maybe he was getting a little more comfortable. Maybe somebody got on him. Whatever it was, you know, when you watched him early in the season, he looked like he was just trying not to make a mistake, trying to be in the right spot, trying not to overcommit somewhere. Hey, I'm a big guy. And it was fine. I thought he did pretty well. But, yeah, he really let loose at Pittsburgh, and we got to see some personality from him in his play. I didn't see the countenance, you know, on his face, but that's pretty cool. Yeah, I think that next year is as far as upside goes, is his year to prove himself.
Oh, yeah.
Now, again, you know, I'm not in the mood to just hand out and be confident. Oh, we don't need another left guard. We got Ben Cleveland. But him and Phillips, between the two of them, I feel okay about that. And I feel like Ben Cleveland is really the one who showed me he's more ready to play. Tough call. You might not agree. A lot of other people like Phillips, but Ben Cleveland, I think, for his first year, handled himself, looked like he belonged.
The situation with Phillips was a little bit like the situation with Hurst and Brown in 2018, when Brown had to kind of wait until about midseason. And there didn't seem to be any practical reason. I'm looking at the two of them in camp and say, you know, there's no practical reason why you want to give this job to Hurst. I mean, I could see none. But anyway, this coming year, they do need to try and figure out who Tyree Phillips is if they want to keep him. But I don't think they can make the commitment to giving him the starting position. I think that's Ben Cleveland's to lose at this point. With what he's done. You know, they've got three guys. They could say, oh, we got this big battle going on, but it better be Ben Cleveland come opening day, because he's the guy with the tons of upside. We both agree that I think that you tend to evaluate Powers a little lower than me, but I think Powers has proven that he can play guard in the NFL.
Sure.
I don't think Phillips has. So I think you're taking a chance right there if you put Phillips in at guard. It might be it's a move with some upside, but I think the Ben Cleveland upside, based on what we saw alone in that Pittsburgh game, is a lot more exciting.
You know what else pleasantly surprised me is that I thought he was a better pass protector in the pros than I expected him year one.
Yeah.
Ben Cleveland, you know, everybody sticks with his, oh man, he's so big, strong butt kicker out there. But as far as like his just calmness and how hard it is to get around him, I thought he picked stuff up a little bit late, but for the most part, he saw it coming and was able to just use his size.
Yeah, I have two great examples of that. They both came actually in that Pittsburgh game, and they're not highlight blocks. And they're not even classified as pancakes by me, because another player is engaged. Mm-hmm. But I talked a lot of during the draft process about how Cleveland is a good inside to outside processor, and that I'd seen him throw some help blocks at Georgia that were very effective. And he was playing right guard at the time, but he was going from center to the right. Now he's going from center to the left in terms of figuring out responsibilities. Do I need to help the center when I no longer have to? Is there anybody blitzing? Anybody coming through this B or A gap, threatening that on this side? Anybody potentially stunning? And then he goes up to help the left tackle. Well, guess what? The Ravens left tackle needed a lot of help this year. In particular, it's the kind of pressure where a help block can really help. That's kind of redundant, I guess, but a help block can be exceptionally helpful because he's giving ground and mirroring with the player. And that's when the guy is set up to take an absolute ass kicking of a rib shot from that left guard. And I want to see him deliver as many of those as possible without giving up a lot of left tackle mirroring pressure in the process.
Exactly. It's just, it's a feel thing, Ken. It's a feel thing. And you can't blame the young man for, this is my chance. I'm competing. I'm going to play it a little bit safe. I just want to make sure, you know, and then you see that, but I see it in the development as him is like, he was getting comfortable and holding his own. He was never really overmatched. I mean, of course he had bad snaps, but you know, game to game, he did not look like it was too big to him until Aaron Donald came to town. And then as far as like the upside, he's going to be the player that he was in college in the NFL. I feel pretty strongly about that. So whereas Phillips, I have a lot of unknown, you know, man, I've seen the flashes, but he just don't seem to get it. I don't feel that way with Cleveland.
Yeah. I'm excited. I mean, Phillips could still be a guy who figures it out, but I'm afraid it's probably not going to be with the Ravens. I mean, he's entering year three now. He's basically in the at a point where it's going to be difficult for him to figure it out before year four, which means the Ravens are probably going to lose him to free agency after year four. So I don't really see that working out for Phillips now. A lot of things can change in the NFL very quickly, as they did in 21, and he could have a role by week two.
And RZ,
he could be playing well and doing that. Of course, he could have a role at week one. We really don't know if Harbaugh follows a previous rules about letting the more senior player retain the position until he loses it. Then he could have a role. He could play well starting week one, and Wally Pipp a player like Cleveland out of the job.
Well, I tell you, Phillips got the benefit of the doubt their very first year because Ben Powers was there, veteran DJ Fluker was there, and Harbaugh did something uncharacteristic, which was play a college left tackle at right guard to start the season, and then this past year, He wanted Phillips at left guard until he couldn't have him there anymore. So Phillips strikes me as I don't like to say this because people get the wrong idea, but a favorite of the coach. Like the coach really believes in him. So to write him off would be a mistake. My problem is that it's a light bulb going off kind of thing with Tyree, and we haven't seen it, and I don't think it's fair to him that he's been moved around. I've said that numerous times. I've tweeted it out. It's really hard to ask someone to move, to change positions, but Tyree's got to take some responsibility for this too. I don't see any aggressiveness in his game. It's really looks like you can see the cloud bubble, the thought bubble above his head while he's playing. And guess what, Ken? It's year three coming up for him.
Right.
It's now or never time as far as, like you said, his time at the Baltimore Ravens. He better show it up this year. It's going to be interesting to see.
I want to go back to the point you made about aggressiveness because it's an excellent point. Tyree has over 35-inch arms. He has a lot of physical strength. I don't know how much functional strength he has in a relative sense. In terms of his how he can translate that to gameplay, we haven't really seen as much of that as we have. We know that the guy can lift, and we know the guy has enormously long arms. He certainly has tackle-length arms over 35 inches, and he should be punching. He should really be trying to figure out, creating a plan the way a pass rusher creates a plan of how can I get this guy off his center, get him to stop executing his plan by making that punch, getting him under the armpit, getting a shot to the heart, whatever it might be, to try and make him off his center and keep him off his game. It's just that physicality, if it's not a part of his game, it's a mistake. And, it's the kind of thing you hope he'll get positional coaching for during the offseason. If he did come to camp and he was a different, he suddenly was a puncher, a striker right off the snap, I think, there'd be a lot of reason why he might get the first shot at left guard.
There you go. And, but again, I think some of that is on the Ravens and some of it's on Phillips himself. So we'll see that, I'm pretty patient as someone who evaluates players. But once you've gone two full years and you still look like you did pretty much as a rookie, in my opinion, that to me is an issue somewhere along the line. Like you can't just blame that all on coaching. He's got to take ownership and try. to, well, he obviously is trying, but he's got to take ownership and have some of that come from within. So,
right. Patrick Queen, a not too dissimilar situation. I mean, Phillips could say, well, I was a left tackle always in college, always been a left tackle, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. And now you're asking me to play guard and it's different and this. Well, that's true. And you know, Patrick Queen's being asked to do something. He's so young and this and that. I'm tired of the excuses now. It's year three for both players.
That's right.
Put up or shut up. You know, it's time to get it done at the NFL level to prove you can play in this league. And frankly, you haven't earned the snaps yet. And that's true of both players, by the way. Queen has been given snaps because we don't have any better options. Phillips has been given some snaps because he's, a coach's favorite. And I actually think that both Cleveland and he are coach's favorite. I think they both were favorites of Harbaugh, as I've heard, in terms of where they were drafted. And each of these players needs to basically take whatever snaps are given to him, whether they pick them up via injury, garbage time, rotational play, whatever, and not complain about the amount of play they're getting. Just focus on having great snap by snap results in the opportunities they get.
Yeah. And play hard. I would say that for both of them. Play hard. Don't be afraid to just go all out. Don't be thinking, you know, sometimes you just got to kick butt, you know, we got to have that mentality. And we've seen that come and go with Patrick Queen. When it's time, when he's got, you know, it's an open field and it's his chance to kick butt, he's all about it. But if when it comes to the dirty work and there's a 300-pound man in his face, I don't know about that one. You know what I mean? So same thing for Tyree. I want to see him play like his hair is on fire. I think that would help him a lot. And Ken, the only other guy I think we didn't talk about was Tristan Colon. Mm-hmm. I know we're running late, so I just wanted to, you know, give it exclusive rights free agent, I believe, right? ERFA.
ERFA. So the Ravens have him at the contract they want, at the league minimum.
He started the one game. I believe that was the Rams game when Bozeman got sick beforehand. He played in 12 games. For me, Tristan Colon is an okay player. I like his attitude, by the way, just the intangible. He's always really engaged on the sideline, in mm-hmm. the huddle. Seems like a great guy, like you would want to be his teammate. But I would like to see a scenario where, again, you know, we have this young rookie. We talked about McCary maybe inheriting the center position, where I want to see a rookie push Tristan Colon. For a spot in this roster and make the Ravens have tough decisions. So I think a superstar.
That's a high probability of happening in Colon's case. The Ravens thought more of him in 2020 when they brought him up to the roster rather than lose him to an outside the organization signing. I don't know if you remember that, but they actually elevated him to the roster and then deactivated him the same week, which is very unusual.
Right. Okay. Yes.
And they did it because somebody else was sniffing around and wanted to sign him. And the Ravens said, you know what, we'll elevate you now. I don't think the Ravens, he enters year three. He's maybe not on the bubble in camp, but he's in danger. He's not a sure thing to make the roster. And if they found a better center, I think they drafted a guy they really like. I think they'd use him. Colon has a. Since he's backed up at a few different positions, he's backed up at guard and center. He's probably a little more likely to hang around for this year than some other players. Doesn't have a contract issue like, say, Ben Powers does, or a year four issue like some other players have. But, you know, if he's going to get playing time, it's got to be this year. And I do not believe if he has a similar number of snaps this year, I don't believe he'd be a Raven in 2023.
I agree. And I think he's a good player to hang on to. You know, nothing's happening with him. We're not going to find out what his status is with next year's team until probably final cuts. You know, it seems like that because I see him as a player that is capped by his physical ability. His lack of length does show up, Ken. Like, he's a fighter, but his lack of length shows up. And I'm not a stickler on arms as much, but it does. With Colon, it caps his upside. It's very noticeable. So, good player. A great football player, maybe one of those 4A players, you know, great college player. If there was a minor league football, he'd be great there too. NFL is just a little too much to ask him to be an every down starter.
Kick butt in the Canadian Football League.
That's right. Yes, sir.
For sure. So that's quadruple A. All right, outstanding. Jason, always a pleasure to talk offensive line with you. Do any other overarching thoughts maybe about how much draft capital you expect the Ravens to use on interior linemen? Now, we know they're probably I'd be in favor of them taking two picks at tackle, one guy who's an early premium pick and another guy who's a developmental tackle, because I think they're really short at tackle at this point. But what about the interior offensive line? How many picks would you expect there?
Thanks, Ken, because I think that this is something that that Ravens fans are kind of sleeping on. You know, they're caught up on a few different topics. Obviously, Greg Roman's a big one and Harbaugh and all that. But it seems like, hey, do we sign Bozeman to be the center? Or are we going to have to go out and get a center? And I'm looking at the guard position, like you said, with Zeitler, you know, unknown after this year. Does he want to keep playing? Do we extend him? Is he starting to fall off? You know, you want to have a backup plan if Phillips doesn't. The light bulb doesn't go off and he's a below average player, then do you really want to go in with just Ben Cleveland as your starting left guard? So I think that the guard is a sneaky need for this team, not a top need, but a need nonetheless. Like, I would like to see a young guy brought in. Can't wait to dig into this class who can actually compete with who you expect to beat out of Ben Powers, who you expect to be able to compete. Hey, if the light doesn't go on for Tyree, this guy is going to be better than Tyree. So yes, I would put it. And with our fourth round picks, Ken, this is what an overarching theme for me. You look at your nose tackle. You look at a middle linebacker. You look at a running back. You look at a guard. Those, all four of those, are not considered premium positions. They should be stocked in this draft. We can get our next middle linebacker in the fourth round of this draft, or our third running back in the fourth round, our next Brandon Williams in the fourth round, our next Kevin Zeitler in the fourth round. So I'm really excited that fourth round this year. Also, like the punter out of I can't remember his school, it was a West Coast kid, bombing those 80-yard punts. San Diego State, Areza or something like that. Apologize for his fans, but when you look at that, I'm like, Ken, you know, Sam Cook's getting kind of old. If we took a punter in the fourth round, I don't know if I would hate it, because this guy's kicking the ball 90 yards in the air.
It would be an interesting choice. I honestly think he'll be gone by then. I think somebody else will take a flyer higher in the draft. Now, people have been burned on punters time after time after
time. The Steelers this year.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to Ray Guy, I believe Ray Guy might have been a first or second round pick. I'm trying to remember exactly when he was picked. But then he's often the one that's always mentioned when people talk about great punters being taken. He was a good punter for a good long time. But Russell Erksleben, does anybody remember that name?
I don't even know who that is, Ken.
He's a kicker punter drafted by the Saints. He was going to solve every problem they had. Take a look at his career. It's not that exciting. So it's but he's I believe, a first round selection by the Saints back in that era as a kicker punter. You could look him up right now, but he late 70s, I want to say, was the period he was drafted. Might have been early 80s, but the Saints were bad for a long period of time, and they had a reputation that was similar to the Cleveland Browns in terms of blowing those early draft picks. So
So you think the punter might go a little earlier? I don't know where he's going to end up on my list, but I think I'm going to put him on there because, I mean, it's just amazing to watch this man kick the ball. If you know, for I have to put. Maybe I'll type his name in the comments, but it's like A-R-A-I-Z, Arazia or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what he does with the football is amazing. Hopefully he can hold for the kicker.
That's really the case, because if they do get rid of Cook, it's a Hall of Fame holder they're giving up.
Yes, sir.
Not just a very good punter. They're giving up a Hall of Fame holder. And that's where I think that the thing may be stuck. I think, you know, Cook didn't have a terrible year. Sure, they want to pressure him in camp every year to try and see if he can hold his job. But in the end,
he might retire too.
Could be.
He's there. He's up there, you know, in age.
I think they're going to have to push him out the door. They're going to have to deactivate his key card in order for him to be not there. Leave his photo with security as somebody they don't want in the building, because it doesn't seem like he's the kind of player that the Ravens that would retire from let's say it's $1.5 million to $2 million a year of salary that he's getting. Just seems unlikely.
All right. I'd never met Sam Cook. He probably got a better feel for his personality than me, but he didn't look too happy with that incomplete pass, Ken. So maybe no. he doesn't want to end on that note. You know what I mean? He wants to get another completion in there.
All right. Great having you on, Jason. Tell folks again one time where they can find your work.
Sure. If you made it this far, I would really encourage you to check out my channel, Huddle It Up Films. And that's on YouTube. I'm doing highlights for every single player that I can. So I'm basically doing 50 highlight videos in 50 days or thereabouts. Mentioned that I have Zeitlers and Bozemans up there. So if you're interested in offensive linemen, you want to see the stuff that we're talking about, go ahead and look it up. It's only a 4-minute, 6-minute videos. I put their best plays, what I consider mostly their best plays in the front, and just regular good plays at the end. Defensive players, defensive linemen. You want to see Brandon Williams. You want to see Marcus Peters. You want to see Deshaun Elliott when he was in there. I'm putting them all together and releasing the highlight videos, something I'm very proud of. And something that other Ravens analysts have even told me that they use, that it's a good eye test, you know, just to see what this player looks like when they're going right. So I'm very proud of that, Ken. And then, please interact with me on Twitter, Huddle It Up Films. Be more than happy to talk with you. A little quiet on the draft, Ken, like I said, because I want to get my ducks in a row before I go out there just running my mouth.
That is the way to do it. And, you know, anybody on Twitter who's basically saying, oh, I got these guys ranked and I got this and that, and I immediately have some questions, because it takes more review than that. It's a long process to go through the draft look, even at a topical level, to really understand the players that are out there. I did want to say, if you want me, we've been talking about video projects we can do this offseason. I'd love to talk about your Ben Powers highlight video and do that with you, because there's a lot of plays, and particularly from that Steelers game, that I think have really positive portent for 2022 that I think are worth.
You talking about Cleveland? Cleveland?
I'm sorry. Yeah, not Powers, Cleveland. Yes, I can do Powers too, by the way, but Cleveland, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe we can do a video where we go through his highlights. And maybe I can pull some poor plays too, and we could do something fun on my channel. That'd be good. That'd be fun.
Yeah, happy to do that. If you want lists of poor plays from that, maybe even, you know, his best and his worst from that Pittsburgh game alone, which we know is his best outing of the year. We could certainly talk about that. I'd be happy to provide you.
There you go. I'd love to have Ken on the channel. Love to have you on the channel, Ken. So that'd be great. Sorry about that.
Outstanding, Jason. You're always great talking football with you. Other people out there, if you'd like to talk about football this offseason, and I know we're all a little bit down on the Ravens, but here's the series for you. It's fixing the Ravens. So I want to hear from you about what is required to fix the Baltimore Ravens for 2022. And the narrower the topic, the quicker we're going to be able to get to it and get it on air. If you want a complex topic like firing Wink Martindale, I'm going to want a lot of things that go with that, like who you're going to replace him with. What defense would you rather see run than what they're doing? So try and make it narrow. Something about maybe how do the Ravens get younger on the defensive line, that sort of thing. If you've got an idea about they get this veteran on a 1-year deal and they've got, you know, draft picks and there's three guys you like, that's the kind of narrow focus I'd like something to be discussed in 20 or 25 minutes. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.